Hi everybody, welcome along and welcome to those online. As you know, our course is called The Spiritual Teacher and welcome to this class two. And we'll begin as we normally do by doing a short meditation. We'll take refuge together, generate a mind of enlightenment, and gather prayers. And so during the course, there are paths where we stop for a moment to ask questions and then to also meditate. So to begin, please just get comfortable in your seat. The most important thing is that your back is straight, your shoulders relaxed. Place your hands and feet in any position that feels comfortable for you. Then just check that your head is sitting evenly on the neck. And that your eyes need to close and close completely or be partially open. Let your body breathe itself. And then relax into awareness. Imagine the ground beneath you is completely pure, to the level of the palm of a hand, and a smooth lapis lazuli. The ground itself is deep blue, crisscrossed with gold markings. And the space above you is filled with offerings from gods and men. In the space in front of you on a lion throne, on a cushion of lotus, sun and moon sits Buddha Shakyamuni, the essence of all of our current teachers. He's wearing the three monks and the three ordained. He's wearing the three robes for the ordained monk. And surrounding him is an assembly of direct and indirect teachers. These include other Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, deities, Kakis, Dharma protectors, and so on. The thing that you're leading all sentient beings who are related to you as family, so you're leading them in a safe direction of the three rows of abundance. And because you fear the traumatic torments of an uncontrolled life. An uncontrolled life, an uncontrolled death, and an uncontrolled rebirth. To stop the fears arising from these three states of being uncontrolled, I go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create to listen to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to gain all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create to listen to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to gain all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create to listen to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to gain all sentient beings. Think from the heart of each refuge object, let some nectar stream down. And these dissolve in yourself and the living beings surrounding you. And your negative karma and obstructions are purified. In your lifespan, your virtues and realizations are increased. So fortified with wisdom and compassion, recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. And the sight of development is yourself and to establish all beings in the four immeasurable states. For firmness, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in happiness and free from the bias of attachment for friends and conflicts and enemies. Again, from the heart of the refuge objects, the Buddha and his community, let some nectar stream down. And these dissolve with yourself and all living beings. negative karmas are obstructive to purify. Your lifespan, your virtues, and realizations are increased. So now you invite the field from the accumulating merit, whereby you're going to purify further obscurations and accumulate and increase merit. So you say, Reverend, may I prostrate with my body, which is mine. I present my body as an offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since the end of this time, and rejoice in the merits of all my benefits. Please remain until the end of cycle of existence and turn on your dharma and your beliefs. I can take power and dark spirits to not regret my mind. So to prevent us clinging to the practices we've already done, and to stop the appearances of the samsaric world, recollect emptiness, and acknowledge and feel merit every appearance, your body, speech, and mind are all empty of any intrinsic identity, but do exist dependently. What arises dependently is a pure land. And this we intend to offer to the Buddhas and his entourage. So you say, this ground, the knowledge of perfume, the serving of flowers, the world of mountain, the four continents of silence. I imagine this is the Buddha field of offer. May all living beings enjoy its clear way. The Buddha accepts the offer and smiles at you. You look up, meet his gaze. In the eyes of the Buddha, you find him its humility, kindness, and acceptance. And you have this feeling that you're going to realize each stage of the path. Up in the Lama's heart, who's indivisible from the Buddha, a replica emerges and moves through space. It comes to the bottom of the crown of your head. And this is descent coming down to your heartlet. And here the radiance of the Buddha begins to expand, filling your body, speech, and mind with light, which pours out through the pores of the skin. And begins to fill the 10 directions of space. Think that all beings have been established into a state of full enlightenment. From the vast expanse of enlightenment, you hear the resounding nature of the mantra of Shakyamuni. You join in and say, from the 10 directions of space, the light begins to return, re-enters your chest at the heart level. You hear the sounds of passing traffic, and you know what the seat feels like beneath you. So your body, you're aware of conventional phenomena. Do you understand that this meditation is one of imagination? And though it is imaginary, it has imprinted the mind. The mind now has conditions that can complement the causes which bring about full enlightenment. And I think that already the causes and conditions are there. There are others that need to be gathered, and one of them is reliance upon a spiritual teacher. So just breathe it in through your nostrils and exhale through your mouth. Move your body, move itself, and make yourself comfortable from your seat once again. Okay, again, welcome to the class. So briefly, we'll look at what we've covered. We began by looking at the need for a teacher. So again, why do we need a teacher? What's the reason? Good. Could you articulate that a little clearer? Yeah. So what we're trying to do here, we need a teacher because we do not know how to gather the two accumulations of method and wisdom, and we do not know how to purify the two obscurations. Two obscurations being cognitive obscurations and afflictive obscurations. So we just don't know how to do that. In fact, when we first come to it, we probably don't even know what those words mean to it. Now, we're going to need many different types of teaching. And the reason for this, because the study and the practices are changed depending upon the different levels that are engaged in. This is what Peter's, we need to look at these teachers and these different levels and to see the try to develop an appropriate relationship for that level. Now, the Sanskrit name for a spiritual teacher is a guru, and it's lama in Tibetan. So what do you understand about the meaning of guru? How do you start with the lama? What's the word you about lama? What's the meaning of lama?
Giving birth to the methods, to love.
Yeah, the guru is so given birth to the sublime, and the sublime is the mind of enlightenment. That was from that mind of enlightenment, all the other good qualities and the good flow. And guru is?
Is he a good quality?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. So, the guru is the heavenly fellow with good qualities, and the lama is the man given birth to his good qualities, particularly the mind of enlightenment.
Yeah. Often we give names like guru, lama, and it's a name. So how do we know that that actually fulfills the
mind? Let me ask this. This is good. So keep going. So they were saying, if people have the names guru and lama, and the question about that is that
how do we know that they actually have the skills to be actually have those names.
Yeah. So they was asking, how do we know that they have the skills that are suitable for that name? Yeah. So we're talking, that's what our class is about. That's good. A person should ask that question, different. Good on you. Yeah. So here what we're going to look at is the qualities of the teaching. And how you have to go about trying to discern whether they have the qualities or not. Okay, so here's a number of books that can help you do that. There's lots of lists in there of all the different qualities that a guru or a lama needs. And this book here called The Guru Drinks Bourbon. So sometimes it shows that the gurus or the lamas act in ways what they're a bit disconcerting. And he explains how to look at it and why they might be doing those sort of things. Turning Confusion to Clarity is a very good book, really down to earth. But like I said, the book I keep promoting is this book right up at the top, Relating to Spiritual Teachers. So I remember one time I was doing this course, I referred that book, there was a student in here from the Nyingma language. And he went off and got this book, and it really helped him. I said, yeah, you bet you will. Anyone from a different lineage than this, you want to read that book. Saved a lot of problems. And especially if you look back over the history of the relationships between Westerners and gurus, you know it's been fraught. And so if the person had that particular book before and read it, they wouldn't have any of those problems. That's why I always recommend it. Okay, so today we're going to look at three things: finding a teacher, evaluating them, and then looking at the qualities, in particular the 10 qualities of a Mahayana guru, because there are also, like I said, the changes. So if you have a Vajrayana guru, they need the 10 qualities of the Mahayana plus another 10. If they were just teachers from the lower stuff, then it would be different again. Okay, it's finding, so I've got to find one first of all. So this has got like four things you want to examine or question or to look at. So the first one is when you come across a teacher, especially a new teacher, and you know nothing about them, find out what lineage they're from. So you know in general there's four major lineages in Tibetan Buddhism. And so we have the oldest lineage called the Nyingma lineage, it's called the lineage of the elders, the Nyingma. Then we have Kagyu, Shakya, and finally Kalupa. Now, luckily for us here, we have the internet, for instance. You can go searching there. But especially in our organization, the FPMT, many of the examinations are already done for us. And then what they'll do is they'll put up a teacher's bio up online, and then we go and have a look. And when they come, they know that they've never met any of us before, right? So they introduce themselves. So many of you might have been here when Geshe Zofa has done this, right? You can feel how much it affects you. So I'll often give you, I'll often tell you who their teachers are and what they were taught and who influenced them the most. Like, for instance, Geshe, the Geshe from Geshe Zofa. Right? So whenever he talks about his teaching, he always cries, doesn't he? With his tears in his eyes. So he often talks about this was his teacher, and this teacher was taught by these teachers. And then you know yourself, if you go online, you want to try and find out as much as you can about the teacher and the lineage it comes from. You never want to find a teacher that's just out there on his own. As soon as that happens, from my point of suspicion, be really careful. It should come from something that everyone can check. So here you can see I've got the lineage of the Nyingma tradition up here. We've got Tulopa, then Naropa, then Mapa. And this lineage across the Nyingma lineage also crossed over into the Kagyu lineage. So you're going to see little splits off and you find similar teachers here, but then different teachers a bit later. The most important thing I said again is every teacher comes from a lineage. They come from a monastery, and that monastery's had a lineage of teachers. And those teachers have been teaching, they teach all the students. And this guy who once was a student, he's now a teacher. And when they come, they'll tell you who their teachers are. They nearly always put more, they promote their teachers much more than they promote themselves. The other really lovely thing is in Kitsa Rinpoche, this is particularly important in Tantra. And that's why they do it. They'll get up and say, okay, you're going to trust me, so I need to tell you something about myself. And so they go about doing it. In Kitsa Rinpoche, yeah, so when they talk like this, it's like, because you've been studying for a while, you know some of the names. And then, like he would say, so I was taught this by his holiness the Dalai Lama. So you go, oh, amazing, great. Dalai Lama taught him. And he said, and his holiness himself was taught by Ling Rinpoche. And now Ling Rinpoche was taught by Kabong Rinpoche. And so, like, you know these names, right? And you've been reading the books, you know how great these people were. And they said, Kabong came from here, and da da da. So what you're looking for is authenticity in the lineage. Lineage is really important. And that's something you can check. Now, once you know that, I'll explain all that to you, then it's like, what have they been learning? So they might say, I was going to say, I was taught this by this particular teacher at this place. So if they're going to give you like, that's coming up shortly, is like a monk coming to teach on Mahamudra, I'm sure he will say these sort of things. Where I took my teachers from, who my master was, what retreats I did. All of that is necessary so you can have confidence in the person that you're talking to. So while they're doing all this, of course, you're getting some sort of feeling, some sort of vibe about the person in front of the answer. Guess what from Tunis Institute?
Yes, she's
sort of, like, you look at his face, eh? It's like this amazing, like, heart-shaped smile, right? You know, and he's very gentle. They're very different from many of the other lamas that they've had. And you feel quite warm towards him, and he feels quite warm towards you. So it will also be coming up as a sort of talk to you. Now, I guess this is the part where you can't really, this follows on. So when the teacher comes and they have students, check the students. Because the behavior of the student has direct thing to the teacher. So if you're all, well, I might be all right, thanks. That's impossible. But there'll be times where we'd say, you know, look at the student and see, is this the sort of student I might become? So say, the students become very much like the teacher. But they're like sort of stamps. So you become more, you should actually fear it. Or he's holding this or something, right? You try, but it's got to be emulating that person. So you want to know, does this person, will this person look after me? And how will I know this? Is he actually looking after the other students? If he is, then you end up in a conflict of being looked after too. And this is this other thing. This is really important. And what you find is great teachers, like Lama Rinpoche or and Kinsu Rinpoche. The Kinsu Rinpoche says, don't you say, I have no realizations whatsoever, but I have kept my vows. And if you've taken any teaching where vows are involved, especially when you start going from the sutra practices to the tantric practices, and you see the things you have to do, there's a lot of things you need to do. And if for a teacher to say, I've never broken this, okay, that's something you can trust. Now, when you come to actually evaluate the teacher, there's a couple of bad things that take place. The first thing is, you might be really naive about it. And that's got little problems, if you like that. The major problem is that you lose your own sense of power. You think of teachers like the Buddha. There's nothing you have to, really, very little you have to do. You just have to agree with them and think they're wonderful people. This is not a good idea. The second thing that can take place is that you become really paranoid about it. Right? I've had good things where people thought they could actually read your mind while you're sitting there. Right? So then you get really worried. we're not always thinking good thoughts. And so what happens is you end up distrusting them. And then this really puts a block in your learning. If you're really, if you become unsure of the teacher, it's like, I think you're better off finding another teacher. Well, they're all going to teach you the same things. But, it's not a lot, but there's material about this in Berzin's book. And this is really to do more with the student's approach. Now, there's a great verse, it's called Verses About Friends. And I think this is from the Buddha himself. He says, relying on an inferior person, people will degenerate. Relying on one who's equal, they stay the same. Relying on the superior, they will attain holiness. Therefore, you should rely on one who is superior to yourself. If you rely on one who is superior in ethical conduct, who is thoroughly pacified and possesses the highest wisdom, you will become superior, even to the superior. So what do you take from this verse? More wisdom, more compassion, more kindness, more skill. That's why we want someone better than us. So this is what's sort of doing. So you'll find that nearly every teacher who hops up here is is better than us in many ways. But we just didn't know a little bit more than yourself. But you know, you want that person up there to not be the same as yourself, not be inferior to yourself, but to be better than yourself. Okay, do you have any questions? Just over these the first three or four slides. Yes?
That slide about the taking care of the students thing, or checking out the students and the teacher. What does it indicate if the followers of a particular teacher are quite clicky? In terms of, how can I describe it? There's an in-group and you're not in the in-group. And that's potentially not reflective of the teacher.
Yeah. In fact, there's been many students whose behavior could be seriously questioned, and that doesn't have any thing on the teacher themselves.
So you wouldn't necessarily, if you came across that part about it, the students wouldn't necessarily be a reflection of the teacher. That's just...
And so remember here too, this is written not for lay students, they talk about ordained students. Not so much lay students.
Right.
But so as you know, lay students like us are flaking. But even the summer members, especially the new ones, you've got to remember they've just come off the flaking duty, they've just got the red rose on, and they're learning. And so many of their behaviours are the same as they were. And it's going to take time for them to change them. And there have been people who have been away for some time, and you wonder this is not common, of course, but it has taken place. It's for sure students can behave quite poorly. But like I said, I think it's, you'll need to, I think, the rest of it is just to talk to them then. You know, like at CI, for instance, we have a big lunch table, so everybody sits around, there's talking. But even there seems a little tricky, isn't it? It's like there's one table just for the Sangha members to have all their lunch, and they do. And that's fine, they should have lunches together and that. But then we, as lay people, get a chance after that to chat with them. And again, we sort of like, what's the behavior? Yes, there are meditation. So this is settle the body into an upright, relaxed posture. Drop the shoulders. Let your weight rest naturally on the seat. Now set an altruistic intention to find a wise guide for the benefit of all. So have you ever wondered how to find someone you can truly trust with your inner life? The central insight is that a healthy spiritual bond is built on careful checking and not blind faith or good feeling. If you understand this, you can move from being a victim of charm to a master of your own path. This is very much like a traveler, or being a traveler, checking your maps before taking the journey. So what do you think would make a teacher truly reliable? Well, they must hold a living tradition of wisdom without broken links. And how does the history of practice shape us? They're passing on the knowledge of the lineage to us. So it's passing the knowledge and the instructions that follow that shape us, shape our practice. What do you think it would mean for a teacher to truly care for a student? An authentic teacher would nurture your potential, very much like a parent raising a child to become a capable adult. When you're investigating a teacher, you should check to see how they treat their students, what their ethics are like. Are they abiding by the ethical codes? So the idea is we have to value our own judgments as a vital tool for protection. There are rogues in red. There are people who can mislead you. So it's important that we check the lineage, maybe find out the history of the practices they've done, look at the students and how they behave, and then rules the vows that they hold. And so just to leave, know that you have the power to choose your own teacher wisely. And then just breathe into your nostrils and exhale. Okay, so now we're going to look at the qualities of a Mahayana teacher. And there are 10 of them. And there's a simple way you can memorize all of them. You just do it into three groups. Like the first is a section, group of three, then a group of three, and a group of four. So the first group of three. This all relates to the three higher trainings. So a teacher needs to have the three higher trainings, in other words. And as you know, the higher trainings are the higher trainings in ethics, concentration, and
business.
That's it. That's right. They're the three higher trainings. Right? Now, in this, the way it's presented here, ethics means that the teacher is disciplined. They have discipline in their own mind. Which means, basically, there is no contradiction between what's taught and what's being acted upon. This would mean that the teachers learned to control their own mind and actions. Yeah, so if a teacher is not disciplined, they won't be able to discipline us. And they say that true discipline makes the mind very soft and pliable and ready for deep learning. So how might we apply this ourselves? So if we know a teacher is disciplined, how might we, as beginners on this path, discipline ourselves? Well, one simple thing we can do, so we've all taken refuge, right? There are refuge precepts. Does anybody know what one of them might be?
No killing,
refuge precept. This is on the vows of approaching refuge, yeah. Approaching virtue, sorry, on the five vows of approach virtue. So let's just take that one. So that if you wanted to be disciplined, you could go, okay, for the next 3 hours or the next hour, I'm going to make sure that without coming in. So that's a discipline you'll be able. Now you might think, okay, next hour I'm not going to lie at all, or I'm not going to use divisive speech, I'm going to try and bring harmony. You just choose a time and just pick any one of those precepts. So the precepts of refuge is like there's three things to do and three things not to do. And the vows are take go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha three times a day. And so just start finding those things and deciding, I'll do that for the next hour or 2 hours. Give you time. Yeah, okay, I'm disciplining myself. It's exactly what my teacher will tell me to do. And it's what we'll do. The discipline, which refers to the higher training of ethics. in relation to the higher terms of concentration, they use the term serene. And this really refers to having a really calm mind. And of course, this is having the mind calm is a skill that we have to earn through practice. And an authentic teacher shows us calm in everything they do. So being serene means controlling the delusions using mindfulness and introspective alertness. So mindfulness means we know what to do, but we remember the instruction. And introspective alertness is saying, are we doing it, or are we doing something else? We're always checking, are the delusions coming to overwhelm us, or do we have them under, keeping an eye on them? In fact, you can sort of, the example I give is often as the mind is like an angry elephant, isn't it? And you have to tie it to a stake, to something. That tying is the mindfulness. But just to make sure they have this little hook to go, to make sure you stick to it, and that's the perspective on this. So here again, we can apply a reflective question. We can ask ourselves that. You can ask yourself, what you often find is you'll catch yourself after the fact. Is your mind leading you, or are you leading you? Oftentimes when the mind leads you, that's when you often regret your behaviour. So as I say, after you've done it, oh my gosh, and it just happened.
Because this is about the inner world of their mind. How do we know?
So one of the things what you find out is what you need to do then is study calm abiding. And calm, because this is the state they're talking about, right? The state of concentration is really firm, they're really good at it. So one of the things that happens with calm abiding is the body becomes really pliant and light. And so what happens is they can move really fast. So I remember this time, one time we went, there's a big thing somewhere, Town Hall. There's a big Sam Mandela built, and then it had, then at the end they scraped it all together, and they kept taking it out of the river. And so what happened, so that all took place, and Geshe-la and another monk comes with the monks who built it, they took all the sand down to the Lisbon River. You see the scene go through the city, and us younger, like 30, 40 years younger than them, right, couldn't keep up with them. So I just go, Jesus, that's one of the qualities of calm abiding. So I was going, okay. And one other time, Geshe-la said, we had a big puja up at the CI, and it wasn't being done very well by us. And then Geshe-la said afterwards, I nearly lost my patience. But he didn't. It was pretty poorly done. That. Just what the students were doing. It was quite disappointed in this, I think. But anyway, he didn't lose his life. He did. Good credit. The other thing, so the other one is this one, is if you ever go and take a high sangha tantric initiation, the lama has to self-generate. Right? That really takes it. You can go down there and wait, but they're still working 3 hours. Then they do it right now, a little bit of time. Now they start doing it for us. So now it goes on for another 4 hours, little break, another couple of hours. And they're fresh as anything. And like often, so we watch them, we're all sitting down there, they're doing all the work, and we're slumping. We're really tired. We don't have the ability to concentrate. Whereas they do. And I think that can sort of help you. So, okay, this person does have a certain level of concentration, that's for sure. And later on, when Geshe had to go back to India and work in the tantric commentary, you had to memorize, I don't know how many hundred pages of text. Right? And then you got to spread it all without having a book there. And he was in his 70 then. I'm the boss, and they just train themselves up, right, I'm ready, off you go, and they do it in front of His Holiness and everybody, and it's just like, boy, oh boy, the level of concentration to do that. So there's a little things like that sort of thing. They are plans, and they don't have to be soft, but, you know, very...
It was like what he was fluid.
Yeah, that's a fluid's a good word.
Yes.
Yeah, fluid with the body is also very fluid with the mental capacity and speech. Okay, so we looked at the higher training in ethics and the higher training in concentration, now higher training in wisdom. And the term they use here is thoroughly pacified. And basically what this means is really knowing right from wrong, simply put. So here, of course, the mind has been pacified with wisdom. You know, before it was when it was serene, it's pacified with concentration. It says there, while basic discipline calms the body and focus calms the surface of the mind, wisdom goes to the root. It identifies misconceptions that cause our anger and greed. Now, this thoroughly pacified, it's just this, because you're going to see later on another wisdom deals with different things. It could be the wisdom that knows right from wrong, or it can also be the wisdom that realizes emptiness. So there's different focuses and aspects. So here we've got the three higher trainings. So this is the first thing you can remember. You're looking for a teacher, a male or a teacher, must have trained in the three higher trainings. And what's prohibited is disciplined, serene, calm, and pacified. Now the next three qualities that you're looking for in a teacher is that they need to have a wealth of scriptural knowledge. Meaning, they are familiar with many subjects. Now, you can see this, for instance, when we'll see it again, when the lamas come out, this huge practices that are going on here. You know, so that can make sandy mandalas, they can, or different things that they can do. And I can see, yeah, of course, I can imagine that you could, because your mind would be so clear, calm, and insightful. So whatever they turn their mind to, they could quickly understand it and go deep into it. As you know, I liked when a little while ago, again, who was a great teacher that came up and did all those tantric initiations?
Sarada Rinpoche.
I really love it when they sit there and they just go off the top of their head, this text, blah, 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 and they quote. And then now from this text here, they quote again. It's like it's already in there. You know, so like me, I'm going to use the AI right now. I'm looking at, oh, yeah, there it is. That's what it is. But they know the verse, and they can recite it off, and they can say a thing about something, and then they'll say, and this text says this, but then such and such from another text will say this. And this is phenomenal. When you go, it's probably not stopping to happen anymore for us, maybe. But His Holiness used to do this all the time. He would say, he did this really great thing in here, and then he'd go, and then he'd say, but in the Nyingma tradition, it's like this. And then he'd drop off and say, but the Kagyu, it's like that. And you go, oh my God, this guy knows all the traditions, which is really unusual, because most great teachers, they don't do that. They stay within their lineage, and they know everything about it. But to step outside and to know a great deal about every other lineage, that's something really special. It's really useful too, once you start studying quite deeply, it's always good to get another tack or to show you that you can. So the scriptural knowledge, a wealth of it. Then here's a really interesting one, a thorough knowledge of reality. And here, Kensa Rinpoche said it was, they need to have a valid conceptual knowledge of emptiness from the middle way consequence point of view. That's the middle way consequence point of view, because it's the most subtle view of emptiness. They must know the most subtle. But they don't need to realize it perceptually. They just need to have a really thorough understanding of what it means and the words and all that sort of stuff, the conceptuality. Yeah, so to have a thorough knowledge of reality means to realize that nothing exists on its own. That phenomena exist as collections of parts, or made of causes and conditions, or having a basic label, all these sort of things. Yeah, so a thorough knowledge of reality is the knowledge that no person or object exists independently, which allows the teacher to dismantle the cause of suffering for their students. The teacher should understand such things. It's not necessarily that they realize it, but they must understand it. Okay, so we've got six skills separately. This last one here is the thorough knowledge of reality. No, we've got five. Okay, here's our sixth one. Surpassing qualities of knowledge. So briefly, you could say that this teacher needs to have read a lot of books. You know, read a lot of material, right? You have to have done that. Then they need to have a thorough knowledge of reality, which is a correct conceptual understanding of emptiness. And then they've just got to learn more than you. Yeah, so we go backwards. They definitely know more than me. They have a thorough knowledge of reality and they've read a lot of books. But then they also have the three higher trainings. So there are the six qualities that a teacher really needs, and these are really beneficial for the teacher as well as the student. The next four qualities are mainly about how great an effect the teacher has it, they're terrific for the student. Now, the way I've put these up here is not in the order that's produced in the books. The reason for that is because I'll put it up like this because I've memorized it and it makes it really easy. It goes 3, 3, 4. Right? And the last four just spells fail. They have to be skillful, they have to have abandoned the spiritedness. The teacher's kind of love and compassion and they must be enthusiastic. So you've got fail. So I try and do these sort of things often because there's so many lists, and so many things to remember, isn't it? And the second attempt to meditate on these 10 qualities, you got the first three of three higher trainings. How does that? Disciplined, serene, thoroughly pacified. Great. Then what was it? Well, they've kind of read a lot of stuff. Thorough knowledge of reality. Scriptural knowledge, thorough knowledge of reality, they know more than me. Meditation just means becoming familiar with this. So you want to become familiar with these qualities. Like I said, so I break it up into small chunks and go forward three, back three, forward three, back three, then the next one, forward three, back three. Now put them all together, you know, so three, three, then you get six. Go, right, I'm really confident these are the qualities of the teacher. They really benefit him and me. The next ones really benefit me. So this teacher needs to be skillful. So what does this actually mean? It means that they can guide others according to the other's disposition, personality, and capability. There's a great example of this is in a book called it's called Dear Lovers Over. In the book, what's in the book are lots and lots of letters written to Lovers Over about problems the students are facing. So what's really great is that what the problems the students are facing come up a number of different times in the book, right? But the answers you give is different. Which means that some answers won't suit a particular student, but this other answer that still valid, it still works. So you want somebody like Elizabeth, but who understands us and
there are a lot of those online in the Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archive.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a whole lot of letters from people and
yeah.
answers, and
yeah.
they're a really nice way to receive teachings
because yeah, yeah,
it's so
that's
personal
right. that's
and
right.
specific.
Yeah, yeah, and it really goes through, doesn't it? And you can find if your problem is in there, you might find, oh, that solution fits
yeah.
me too.
I do. That's how I use it sometimes. You look up the index, anger.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Good.
What's he say?
Yeah, yeah, what's it say? That's exactly right. So, second letter is A, which means that the teacher has to have abandoned disappointedness or dispiritedness. You know, sometimes it's very easy to become like him, isn't it? When it's about you. You know, so you're out there, you're trying to help somebody, you tell them to do this and to do that, and you know, give them a lot of detail, but then they don't do it. They find lots of excuses or something, they do it very badly, or this sort of thing. Or, like, yeah, it was Udrasha, wasn't it? So he'd give us the teaching, they give you the definition, and you tell him, and the next week you come around, okay, definition. No one knows it. And week after week after week, this happens, you know. And you never got cranky. Okay. It's like, yeah, I'm trying to help you. It's like, are you along with me or what?
Any question on that? How can you, maybe you have to be in the moment, but the difference between getting frustrated or perceiving a teacher to be frustrated in that instance versus then being wrathful to help you learn? Like, is that just up to the student to tell the difference?
Yeah, that's right. Then this is from the student side, and you try and put as positive spin on as possible so it helps you.
But it can say Rupesha used to say, like, are you all lazy? And that just slightly stabbed in the heart.
That's right.
But it's not angry. He's not being angry. He's saying, yeah,
just asking a question.
Yeah, yeah. What is it to be like? Yeah, I told you this. You all wrote it down. Like what happened between last week and today? Yeah, so you know, after a little while, I sort of thought, okay, he's going to ask us again next week. This means if he asks me, I've got to be able to have the answer. But the problem is, isn't it? You give him the answer, and he asks you another question. Like, you don't want another question.
Or you'll be all ready.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't ask.
Doesn't
ask. He knows it the whole class.
Yeah, we're going to say, why? And it's not something you thought about. You know? And if you say, it was you told us. Look out. Yeah. So to abandon disappointment means, yeah, so I've got the patience to explain teachers again and again and again. You know? Yeah, so of the 10 qualities, this is the last, but of course I've written up as number 8, just to get that acronym. This final quality is a total abandonment of disappointment. This does not mean that they ignore reality. It means they've conquered the habit of feeling dejected or tired when students struggle. And this mental stability is rooted in deep concern for others. A true teacher understands that a student's confusion is a form of sickness. It's not a personal insult to them. Therefore, they do not feel the need for a thank you or immediate success to keep going. In fact, I read a story. Who was it? Casey Potter, I think. He said that they never, ever expected a thank you from the student. They saw every student as being in a really pitiable situation. Everyone needs help. So thank yous are unnecessary. Okay, the 9. So is love and particular, you know, compassionate love. In other words, you know, they teach others with a pure motivation of compassionate love. So when I was when Miffy's mother asked me to teach, I went to ask Geshe-la, whether it was suitable. I thought, I don't have any of the qualities of the teacher. I went all through this. And he said, never mind. He said, but he told me I have to teach out of this. You're teaching out of, it should be an act of kindness because you can see others are suffering just like yourself, right? Yeah, that's true. Now I can go along with that. The other one was this one he issued for me to don't get disappointed. Yeah, and the other one was I have to know more than everybody else. So I have to keep studying. Don't be disappointed. And the other thing he sees is, you know, people will come in here try to roll me over and make a fool of me. don't get upset. So here, I saw this again and again, also with our love of Lama Rinpoche, constantly delighting and working for others. In fact, one time we were in Melbourne, I was given the sort of honour of leading Rinpoche from his house down to the school to give the teacher there. So you know, you walk out the big bundle of incense that you light up the sort of walk along, and he's behind it. And he'd had the stroke, you know, so he'd been assisted. But as we went along, he asked the principal what my name was, and he Eddie, he said, yes, Rinpoche, what does that sign say? So then as you walk along, there are all these little signs for all the little animals, and they're all Dharma state and stuff. So he got me to stop on each one and read it out. And then as we're walking along, he goes, careful with the little ants. Make sure everybody, yeah, no one wants to stand on the ants. And of course, when he got up and sat on the seat, you know, man, he's a really funny guy. You know, he can find lots of things to be quite humorous about, but he can also like turn on a dime, so to speak, you know. He laughing, and so it's like completely sad, poor thinking being, suffering. Wow. Very, very mentally flexible or kind. You know? So here's the 10, those are the 10 qualities of the Mahayana. You know? We've got the three higher trainings, they have more spiritual knowledge and authority, knowledge and reality, and they know more than us. Great. Now we have to say, skillful, abandoned, disappointed, they teach from the motivation of love and kindness, and they have enthusiasm. And if you just go backwards, you've got enthusiasm, love and kindness, abandoned, spiritualness, and you're skillful. So you just do that a few times, right? Do it. Like if you get home, just say, oh, I'll just put it down with the 10 qualities. Won't take you long. You get them, and then you get a little background if you read a bit as well. You get support. Now, this is how the old Tibetans actually do it. Many times I don't even know what the stuff's about. They get a list, and they have to memorize the list first. Then they go into what each thing is about. Where for us, we're not really comfortable with that, are we? You want to know what's it about first. Then you can tell that they're like, I'll buy it. They go differently. And again, this is from Geshe Potwa. This quote, he says, if the guru doesn't have all these qualities, he should at least have the following five. The realization of emptiness, compassion, greater understanding and qualities than the disciple, pure moral conduct, and no discouragement in teaching disciples. So here again, if you want to try and get some more simple thing, you know, okay, I've got the 10, but what if just briefly, one of the five? You know, you go, well, he's got to know more than me. So you go, okay, that's one of them. I don't want him to get discouraged when he's teaching me. So we've got two. I think it was ethics, three. Realization of his compassion. Yeah, so you probably get that one down too. Pretty much. Like you know, your teacher must know more than you. So you can always sort of like start there. You know, they need to be ethical. Yeah, they mustn't be disappointed. Yeah, they must not become disappointed in you. So they keep, yeah. So there's another part. In fact, if you go through the Lama Chinda, there's quite a long list where they make it. Start off with 10, then it gets 5, and then it gets 3. So, you know. In fact, the next one I'll show you is that. In fact, they might not even have these five. You know, so he says, okay. So then he says, you take those 10 and you say, okay, just a portion of them. Right? So it's not like they have a little more compassion than you, a little more wisdom than you. You know, it's sort of like this. Especially with, like I said, what they call degenerate times. You know, you might be in a place where you don't have visiting teachers from overseas, the great teachers. Then you're going to get people like myself. You know, so I've tripped into that quality of, you know, 1/8 of the quality actually needed. And you know, and I knew that, I know that. In fact, for many, many years, I can't, in all honesty, can't call yourself a teacher when you're sitting up here and you read these lists, right? You go, I don't have any of that, and I don't meet the criteria. But then, like I said, I went to see yesterday, he says, that's okay. You need these four qualities. You must have these four. I went through, yeah, I can do that. Okay, well, way to go. So you guys find anything interesting in these qualities? There's a large hesitancy about that too, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's a little shocking, I find that.
So, because you wouldn't make sure you knew more than the students unless you were going to teach them. In fact, my experience teaching at university is one of the best ways to learn is to teach.
Teach, that's for sure. I would never have kept up my studies if I weren't doing this. I know what I'm like, It's just movies and going here and there, should wind up with a whole lot of other stuff, right? This stuff comes second. But if you teach it, and like I said, have enough suffering in your life and be interested about how it occurs and what you might want to do about it. Well, I think Dharma's a fantastic thing to study. And it's so vast and deep, isn't it? It's a lifetime study.
Several lifetimes.
Yeah, several of those. Okay, let's do our next meditation. Again, to settle the body into a posture that feels upright and relaxed. Now let your breath find its natural rhythm. And as it does so, release tension from your shoulders. Now set an altruistic intention to find a reliable source of wisdom who will benefit yourself and others. So have you ever felt as if you were lost in a thick fog and no direction known? You seem lost, you don't know what to do. We need someone to help us. Now that someone is called a spiritual guide, or teacher, guru, or lama. And this person is weighty with good qualities that far exceed our own. When you understand this, then you do not need to struggle alone. You have a friend and you can begin to follow a clear, lighted path. A teacher is very much like a navigator or a seafarer who has already crossed the sea that we are sailing. Are you able to recognize the limits of relying on your current habits? So a teacher, an authentic spiritual guide, has mapped every cliff and hidden path. And his guidance can be like a compass pointing through a trackless desert. Now, does a teacher need to be perfect to be more helpful to you? A teacher does not need to be perfect, but they need to have more virtues than faults. Now, how would your life change if you acted according to a teacher's instructions today? You might see difficulties as lesson plans, which are designed for the growth. This insight is a bit like acknowledging a lighthouse that illuminates jagged rocks in dark harbour. But if you do have a mentor, a spiritual guide, a guru or lama, try to identify one quality you admire in them and try to embody it. And in this way, your guide can lead you to your own stable realization. Breathing in through nostrils. Now, like I said before, it's not always the case that you could find a teacher. And then they say that when times get really difficult, you're probably even harder to find a good teacher with all these qualities. And this is what I was trying to get at before, I think. It says, so if they don't have the 10 or the 5 or the 3, right? It says, the teacher should at least possess a combination of virtues. Yeah? Some of the more difficult ones, along with others that may be easier. I think one of the most difficult of all the virtues is patience. No, it's me. But of course, the teacher requires a lot of patience, don't they? He says, so look for the hard traits first. So that means what you really want is a teacher who's ethical. That's the foundation of all that. It must be ethical. If you've read about this topic before or looked over the history of Buddhist teachings amongst the West, we found over course of time, a few of the teachers have not been as ethical as others. And this has brought a lot of disharmony amongst the students, a lot of suffering. And so this is why ethics has to be the foundation, everything has to come out of ethics. So you're looking for a teacher who's ethical and who's honest and kind. Ethical, honest and kind. And of course, more knowledgeable than us, isn't it? Especially to do with the wisdom that lies in emptiness. Now, next slide, sorry. We protect our spiritual journey by carefully testing a teacher's ethical integrity and wisdom before offering our trust. If you can't find a teacher with all 10 qualities, seek one with at least half or even 1/8 of these virtues. Prioritize a combination of essential and challenging qualities. Now, if no qualified teacher is available, rely on the texts until you find one. So you know in the Buddha past, right? He never said you Shariputra or you Moggallana, you become the head of our the Dharma or the Buddha something. It said that rely on the text. Be your own art. Yeah, I mean, I'm always reading Dharma texts to find, solutions to things, isn't it? And the lovely thing about it is, like you say, when you're a teacher, you have to care for the students. They're looking for a wide range of solutions. And that's great for me, because then I have a wide range of things I can call upon, and I go crazy. So it's really important that you do check. So that's why they have these lists. So you know what to look for when seeking the friend. And there has been the case, it does happen, sometimes a group of people are all Buddhists and talking and so forth. Some people might ask, so who's your teacher? There's this big thing about the best teacher, but all sorts of different teachers. And so it seems to be like this rush to have one. But it doesn't, like they say, one of the texts take 12 years to investigate. That's the maximum of time it's all there. So when I thought, that was, oh great, I've got plenty of time, because I didn't want to fall into this naivety, you know, this feeling. I'd read quite a bit beforehand, I thought, I don't want to have any of the problems these other people have met, and that's all come because they're naive. And I figured I'm not, I'm suspicious. So I'm going to check. And I thought, I'll take 5 years. I'll just take 5 years. I'll listen first. I'll just spend 5 years listening to these people. And if it all makes sense within the 5 years, I'll take it on. Well, of course, it took two, you know, half the time. And by then, of course, I've met the Dalai Lama, I've met Kinsa Rinpoche. Now, I think the teachings are great, but I haven't selected a teacher yet. Because one of the things is if you take the Dalai Lama, right, you say, how are you going to talk to him? You have to pick up the books. And it's very rare as well, you might be able to write to him. Like when Lama's open, when Pisham was alive, you know, at the beginning, lots of contact with students. But as it became more famous and the teaching got bigger and bigger, then you get less and less time. So you want to, like, in that time, just take your time and study. And when you get this sort of, you know, like, it's like falling in love, right? You get this feeling. It's not like, sort of unreasonable. It doesn't have any reason in it. You just, oh, there's the person. It does happen. So if it happens to you, study. If you're studying and it hasn't happened to you, just keep studying and wait for it to happen to you. Because you want them both. You don't want just one and not the other. So I, out of my fear of becoming naive and something bad happened to me, which I thought might happen, so I went too far just on the study side. I didn't actually apply. I didn't apply to study. Like, I knew what to do, but I didn't do it. And so it took about 3 years, about 3 years, I'm down like there's something wrong with my practice, because why do I not have any, I love the teachers, so I trust them, I appreciate their wisdom, but I don't have this feeling like, you know, like I'm a child, this person I can trust fully. And so I went back to the text and read it and understand the line, but I didn't do, well, that's what I haven't done. So I started doing it and it just changed. Just like, it's like, this is my teacher. This is the person I consider my root guru and all these things. But it was the same.
What was the line?
The line is, consider the kindness of your teacher. So I had all the intellectual stuff and admired his wisdom, but I didn't think about his kindness. As soon as I did that, then it's like, oh yeah, this is the heart. They say, again, you know, you check yourself against the text. Now, they often use, I love this analogy they use too, like the text is like a mirror, then you stand in front of it and see, is there any difference? That's a smart idea. Here's how you should be, but this is how you are. Is it the same or different? You tell pretty quickly, okay, that's what I need to do. He's evaluating the spiritual teachers like checking a parachute before a jump. You must take personal responsibility for your own safety. Do not follow someone just because they are famous or charming. Instead, look for real signs of a good heart and a stable mind. His first check of the teacher follows a clear code of ethics. The true guide should be calm and kind. They must know the teachings better than you do. Because your spiritual growth depends on them, you need to be sure that they are honest. If you follow an unqualified teacher, you may waste your time or even cause yourself harm. Now, so teachers really... authentic teachers must care about the student. You know, so that's something you can like check. Like I know, for instance, that there's a Dharma teacher who his way of behaving towards the students, I think, is very poor. And all that's going to happen to me is going to mess with the students. Because yes, he's very smart, but the care for the others not obvious. It's just not obvious. Yeah, so like I said, you can have people who are very smart and intelligent, but the compassion is not there, the care is not there. Sometimes you can have the person really caring, but the intelligence is not there. So you don't try and find someone who can help these 10 qualities and so forth. Final questions.
Okay.
Yes, Julia.
So we have a lot of touring teachers.
Yeah.
Yep. But we only see them once in a while.
Mm.
So say you feel that warmth, that connection with one of these teachers, but then you're not going to see them again for however long. How do you go about checking then? Do you research them?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so
that's,
online.
That's the thing. You need to go online.
Okay.
Or while you're there, having this, if you notice what's happening now, then see if they actually have students here. You know, and then go and have a chat to the students. And find a way, how they'll find out more about it. Like, is their monastery?
Mm-hmm.
This sort of thing. Ben?
My question is kind of like Georgie's one, but it's for teachers who've passed. Like, for example, Lama Yeshe and now Lama Zopa Rinpoche.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm reading Lama Zopa Rinpoche's books now, I'm feeling, oh my God, why wasn't I under this when he was alive?
Like, that's right.
But I'm wondering, because they've left such a, both Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa have left such a wealth of teachings behind, are we still sort of kind of able to follow them in that
way? For sure. So, Ben, I'm now the man in one of the California jails facing, is on the death sentence there. So, so there's Dharma books put into the prisons there. And all the Lama Yeshe's passed away. Lama Yeshe's was good. You just think before you, that's the fellow, that's him. And then just like you said, he sees all the books. But he sees the head, it's like Lama Yeshe's speaking to him.
Right.
I knew a student here, used to come here, and she was telling me how she had this massive migraine headache. It was terrible. And you can't think when it's like that, you're just in pain, aren't you? You think it hurts. So it's really dark and she was, and she was doing this this light came through, and there was a monk sitting there. And he just looked at you, and he was looking at it quite, and then just smiled. And then it was like the headache just started, that was really weird, right? Like, who was that? Who doesn't know? She's up here looking through the library. I found a book. There's this picture. Gives you that thing. Never seen it, never heard of it.
Really?
That's the fellow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. So I think death should not be a hindrance here. Yeah, so very similar thing to it. So never had the guru devotion that he has and many others have towards someone's life. It's like, sometimes they're quite frustrated, honestly, they just get all that. But I really like the way the Geshe's do it. No, it's not just not like that. Yeah. He's a transplant.
that's perfect. That's exactly
right. Yeah, so it's a different one. Now it's like, oh my gosh, my respect and admiration have risen since he's passed. It's like, what a weird thing.
It's like, if I missed the boat,
No, you just get on the boat and look different things than everyone else. Okay, so that's it. So you know, if you look for in the teacher, it's just these 10 qualities, or like I say, the other 5 is mentioned, really just a portion of them. It serves you well to memorize these. And like I say, it doesn't take long. If you do, try it, start tonight, because you want to do it within like the 8-hour period, and then do it tonight, and then wake up in the morning and say, right, when I have a teacher, the teacher I need to find is one who's disciplined with ethics, serene with concentration, thoroughly filled with wisdom, and so forth. And just, even if you just did the one word thing first, and then do it again, add one more line, what does that mean? You just build up your knowledge slowly. So if anybody asks you, you know. Yeah, so I always try to chunk things small and build on it. And the Mahayana teach, of course, has these 10 qualities that we mentioned. So between now and next week, have a look. We've got pages 5 to 7 of the FPMT notes. Memorize these 10 qualities if you can, and next week we look at the qualities of the student.
Oh,
no, not too bad. You have a portion of all of it. So, again, thank you for those online and for people in class. So, let's dedicate this merit so that we can come into contact with an authentic teacher and relate to them properly so we can bring about our enlightenment to benefit others. Due to the merits and virtues of sections, there are plenty of time to say all of the living world. And indeed, all the living beings without exception into that mind state. By the supreme joy of what is here, not yet all arising world, may that all have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to the sound of science and the world. And a prayer for his holiness as well, love. The wish granting, wish fulfilling joy, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the incomparable ground, to the sea depths, I beseech. May all your holy wishes be these for holiness and glory. Now, for the finding of an authentic reincarnation. In holding and spreading the moon is precious and complete teaching for the reflection of Christ, you wore the armor of patience and never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you I am, Mr. Christ.